Morning, 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 morning. What are we at here? Some dang place in March. 9th. There we go. All right. So I'm going to wait for your questions to come in. A couple of things to chat about. Somebody wrote, and I quote, "My boyfriend of 3 years lost his job last month, which has been a significant challenge for him. He approached me 2 weeks ago and asked if I could help him pay the mortgage. His mortgage, but I told him no. Last week, he presented me with a spreadsheet detailing everything he'd done for me during our relationship, totaling over $20,000 in value. He then broke up with me. 3 years down the drain. Despite feeling guilty because he never asked for anything, I still feel that if he is truly my man for anything, then he should have something to offer as well. I can't believe this man broke up with me because I told him no. He found a way to pay it. I don't think I was wrong because he's supposed to lead, not me. Plus, I don't live with him. If I was living with him, I would have did it then. Do you see my point? Thoughts?" Yeah. Yeah. Delightful. Delightful. Thanks for your tips, David, Tony. Appreciate it. My gosh. My gosh, what did he even say? So, this entitlement is just wild. It's just wild. Females in a female voting democracy are aristocracy. Females with the vote are aristocracy. They wield power. Now, what is power? Power is, in many ways, defined as the ability to escape the consequences you inflict on those without power. Right? So if you don't have power, consequences are inflicted upon you for negative or disapproved of behavior. If you have power, then you escape the consequences you inflict on others, right? So if you go up and slap a guy, you go to jail. If you go start a war, you get a fucking pension and a book deal and speaking tours, right? So power is, in many ways, defined as the ability to escape consequences you inflict on those without power. Consequences are a mark of weakness. Now, most people who have a conscience don't feel comfortable inflicting negative consequences on others while claiming excuses for oneself. It's a basic mark of cold-heartedness or sociopathy. So, to escape the consequences of bad behavior is a hallmark of power. And what is the modern world but a giant machinery by which to have women escape the consequences of bad choices? Power corrupts, right? And power in particular corrupts those who are unused to its exercise. So when you take women and who have had some lesser power throughout history, at least from a political sense, they've had little power, and then you give them money printing, the awesome power, monitor, and control of the modern state, and let them be in control of all of that, then because they go from no power to infinite power, the corruption is absolute. The corruption is absolute. And for most, right? Women who've got an internal standard of virtue and value, they're fine. But this idea that a woman should be providing reciprocity to a man? So he said, "I've given you $20,000 and I don't know what his mortgage was. But let's say that his mortgage was $1,500 and he lost his job. And one of the reasons he doesn't have savings is because he is spending money on his girlfriend." Now, this is a black woman, and it does seem to be the case that, you know, based upon rap songs, which I know are not exactly illustrative of black culture as a whole, but there's a certain amount of vagina for money, right? Well, you bring money and I bring vagina. In other words, you have to earn what you provide. I'm born with what I provide. I mean, that's aristocracy, right? So the aristocracy is born with power, but the capitalist has to earn it, right? So this is what I mean when I say you can't understand modern female nature without studying aristocracy. If a woman gets pregnant out of wedlock, then that would be a disaster throughout history because it's a disaster for society as a whole. But she gets welfare. She gets probably child support. If she wants an abortion, usually that's available to her for free. And if a woman can't pay for her children, she gets $100,000 a year worth of benefits. If a man can't pay for his children, he goes to jail. I mean, this is the aristocracy, right? I'm irresponsible with my reproduction, therefore I get $100,000. Oh, if you're irresponsible with your reproduction, you go to jail, right? So that's aristocracy. I get benefits for exactly the same behavior that I punish you for, right? So, I mean, this is poaching, right? The poaching is when you take, you go and hunt and you take a rabbit from the Lord's land, right? You say, well, that's stealing, but the Lord stole things. I mean, that's just generally history, right? I mean, the Lord didn't earn his, I mean, this is Just Poor, the opening of Just Poor, right? The Lord, the aristocrat, did not earn his land. He basically killed for his land, which again is the case throughout most of human history. But the Lord stole his land by killing its inhabitants and enslaving them. But if you take a rabbit from him, you're guilty of stealing and you have to be punished, usually by death. So if this guy's mortgage is $1,500 and he says, could you help him pay his mortgage? Well, let's say he was asking for half. So he's asking for $750, right? So he paid her $20,000 and he's asking for $750. So he's asking for 1/26th or 1/27th of the money, right? So he's asking for, he's given her $27. He's asking for $1 back. And this is impossible. So what do you bring to the table? I am the table. This is aristocratic thinking. I don't have to provide value. I am value by virtue of existing. That is narcissism. That is obviously sociopathy in my view. Obviously it's amateur opinions. And it is entitlement and aristocracy. Aristocracy leads to misery, in particular for women, right? So when you provoke a woman's vanity by saying she's fantastic simply for existing, right? If you provoke a woman's vanity, then you take away her greatest value, which is love and connection. Now that's something, man. So if you overpraise a woman and you make her aristocratic and you make her entitled and you trigger that behavior, that experience, you make her an aristocrat, aristocrats are isolated. Now, you could say, well, aristocrats have other aristocrats to hang out with. Well, that's true, of course. But a woman who considers herself of value just for existing, right? Men are human doing, women are human being. Women have value for existing, men have to prove value by creation and wealth and trade and all of that. So if you create vanity in a woman, then the person she's going to want to connect with is a man, but you can't connect with a man because the man has to keep feeding her vanity and keep providing value. Well, all she has to do is exist. So then she loses love. She loses connection. She loses respect for a man. She is a user, a vampire, a pillager. So when this woman says, and obviously I know this is not the brightest spark just based on the grammar, despite feeling guilty because he never asked for anything, I still feel that if he is truly my man, then he should have something to offer as well. He should have something to offer as well. Now, of course, women were praised and women did not have to provide immediate value. Because women create and provide children, right? Create and protect children, right? So a woman can take resources from a man, for sure. I mean, that's why men have developed this capacity to produce all of this amazing resource, right? Men are just incredible engines of excess resources because they have to provide for a wife and children. But if a woman is not providing children, then she's just pillaging men. A man, his specific children, not children in general. Right. So I don't think I was wrong because he's supposed to lead, not me. Plus, I don't live with him. If I was living with him, I would have did it then. Do you see my point? And also, so 3 years as well. Like, after a couple of years, if you don't commit and at least you're on the direct path to children, relationships fall apart. They just do. I remember after I left theater school, I directed a play that I'd written, and my stage manager was going through just a gruesome, horrendous breakup with her boyfriend of 5 years. Because there's no commitment. Yes, if you could support, I appreciate the $4. If you could support, I would appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate. All right, so let's get to your questions and comments. I don't care if we stay 1 hour back or 1 hour ahead. Just stop changing the clocks, please. Yeah, it's a funny thing. I don't particularly care about it. It's mildly positive when I get an extra hour of sleep. It's mildly negative when I get, just go to bed earlier. I don't know. I mean, sorry, James, I don't mean to dismiss your concerns, but it doesn't seem particularly important. All right, let's get to your questions. TTC in Toronto is killing me. This day is the embodiment of merit not being valued. The city is the embodiment of merit not being valued. Well, TTC used to be pretty good. Of course, I grew up in Toronto from the age of 11 onwards. I went away when I was 18 to work. And the TTC used to be pretty good, right? But, you know, like all things, as I said the other day, like all organizations not subject to competition get taken over by ideological radicals. Ideological radicalism can only survive in a managerial or decision-making capacity if it's shielded from competition. So a TTC used to be pretty good, used to be pretty reliable, and I think it's just kind of fallen apart. Of course, as it would, right? Okay, so our good friend Zimf says, I'm stressing out, corporate is coming out to inspect our site tomorrow. Any advice? It's a routine visit. I've been handling things pretty well. Currently, I've been the acting manager for a storage facility. I have kept things in good order, but they'll likely ask some questions to ensure that I have a good understanding of the industry, and I just want to make sure I don't come off as a nervous wreck. Decent people don't view themselves as superior. Decent people don't view themselves as superior. Approach them as equals and they'll be fine with it. Now, if you've got some vainglorious asshole, then he's going to find fault with you no matter what, right? But decent people, I mean, I remember when I was working for corporations, I would tour the factory floors and all of these kinds of things, learned quite a bit about manufacturing. And yeah, the people were all just so nervous. And it's like, I'm just some dude, right? I'm just a dude. So he's just a guy. Just talk to him as a guy. As I understand, Rumble is overtaking and integrating locals. Do you have anything to say about this? I should give you my extra coins on locals now and move over here permanently. Well, I don't know about that. Coins on locals are deducted, right? I lose a third because they go through iOS or Android stores. So Google and Apple, I think, take a third. So it's not the most efficient way. Right. So there's of course transaction fees and then a third and so on. And so it is, and then after taxes, like I'm really not getting much, which, I just sort of wanted to point out. It's not Rumble's fault or Local's fault. It's just the way that things have been set up. So the best way to donate is freedomain.com/donate. That's the lowest overhead and all of that. Of course, if you want to donate through these other mechanisms, that's fine. But just be aware of that. All right. Brilliant insights here, Steph. Eureka level analogies. Well, thank you. Anthony says, I'm a soon to be parent. Expect a due date in a few months. Something that is said to me often is, remember to take time for yourself. Is this NPC advice? I'm 40 years old and have had plenty of time to be selfish and to enjoy doing the things I enjoy most. I don't feel like I need any more time to myself. Yeah, I know that's kind of a thing, right? Women are like, oh, I just need an hour for myself. I just need to take a hot bath. I just need some time for myself. I just need. And this is sort of the idea that spending time with other people diminishes yourself, right? Like you're this island and you get eroded by contact with other people. I don't quite understand that. I mean, I do take time for myself. I did had a long walk this morning and did a Bible verse on faith versus works, salvation through faith versus works. Is that time for myself? I'm not exactly sure. I'm happy with time with myself. I had a lovely day with my family yesterday, so that was great. So the idea that when you spend time with other people, that diminishes yourself, generally what that means is that you're lying to or falsifying things with other people. So if you're around someone, let's say you have a boss, right? I remember I had a boss once. We went on a business trip in the States. We didn't particularly, I mean, we got along okay, but we didn't have that much to talk about. And he's the boss who would just tell the same stories over and over. This is a mark of power. And even though I'd say, yeah, I remember you telling me this, he'd just keep going. So we didn't have that much to talk about. I remember coming back on the plane and we both put in our headphones to watch something on the screen on the seat in front of us with great relief. So I couldn't say, bro, what is the issue with you keep telling the same stories over and over again? Do you have like nothing to talk about that's real and authentic and spontaneous and genuine in the moment? Couldn't really do that, right? So if you're with people and you can be sort of honest and direct with them, then it doesn't diminish you to be in conversation with them. In fact, it enhances you to be in conversation with them. So I assume that the people who say, well, you got to take time for yourself, are just like, oh, it's so exhausting being not myself with people. Well, how about you are yourself with people? And then you don't need all this time alone to recover. All right. I had a friend I knew since high, I think you mean school, who dumped something like 30,000 to 50,000 Canadian on his trollop of a girlfriend who went clubbing without him. He paid for her Uber rides, dinners, drove 100 kilometers to see her. He never worked a real job and was spending his dad's money on her for the most part, mid-20s. I got away from him. Yeah. Yes, very sad. It's very sad. It's funny because there is this conversation. Now, I obviously don't want to take the Whatever podcast to be generally representative of modern women, although I know there are some people who do think that it is. And I'm half and half. I think the podcast is very, very interesting. And they're good debaters. The men are good debaters. And they have very succinct and brilliant things to say. So there's that. But I think, of course, bringing on sex workers with no particular experience in intellectual conversations is a little bit of a clay pigeon shoot when the clay pigeons are stapled to the end of your gun. But nonetheless, there is this debate that goes on the Whatever podcast, which is it acceptable if a woman is in a relationship, right? She's a girlfriend. Is it acceptable for her to go to bars and clubs, you know, dressed up, sexy, on her own? Right? It's a big question. I've never faced that because generally, I don't really overpraise myself, but generally the fact is that when I was dating women, they'd want to spend time with me. Now, if we went to a club, we would go to a club. I started to go to clubs when I was like 15 or 16 years of age to like even like 19 plus nightclubs. I learned how to dance and how to be cool. And I remember my social cachet went up quite a bit in high school when I'd be going to clubs for like 6 months and a bunch of the cool kids from high school showed up at the club and I was out there dancing with girls and chatting with people and all that. And my social cachet just kind of went through the roof. I remember that quite clearly. They were all kind of amazed to be there. And I was like, hey, how you doing? So daddy cool, Joe Smooth, chick magnet. So yeah, this sort of question, well, girls go to clubs. And of course, the girls all say the same thing. It's kind of like an NPC thing, which is like, well, if you don't want me to go to clubs, you're just insecure, right? But of course, it's not just a matter of insecurity. It's that if you want to be in a monogamous relationship, then you have to get your attractiveness and sexual validation from your partner. I mean, my wife and I are constantly telling each other how much we are attracted to each other, how great we look and all of that. And so you've got to get your, you know, you eat at home, so to speak, right? So the idea that a woman would go out to clubs because she wants other guys to desire her, that's generally what's going on, right? So it's not just a matter of insecurity. It's, well, clearly you want validation from other men, which goes against your monogamy, right? Goes against monogamy. It's just not a matter of trust, right? And so the general argument is that when a girl goes to a club and she's dressed sexy and, you know, puts on makeup, does her hair and so on, she's putting on a mating display and she's around a whole bunch of men who will mate with her like that, right? I mean, if an attractive woman at a nightclub goes to a guy and says, let's go have sex, the majority of guys will say, yep. On it, right? So it would be like if a guy went out with an ex-girlfriend who was desperate to have sex with him and be in a relationship with him again, she would have a problem with that. She should. And she would say, well, because that woman wants you. She wants to get back together with you. She'll do anything to get in your pants. It's like, well, that's guys in clubs. So guys do not let women tell you what a man is. This is my foundational advice to you, man to man. Oh, never, ever, ever, ever in a million years in any dimension, anywhere in the Spider-Verse, never, ever let a woman tell you what a man is. Never, ever let a woman tell you, well, a real man would do this. And if you're not a real man, if you don't, it's like, don't even, it's funny. It's absolutely funny. Especially woke women, they can't even tell what men are. They don't even know what men are. But they'll tell you what a real man. I don't know what X is, but I can sure tell you what a real X is. Yeah, make her a real ex-girlfriend. So yeah, you never, ever, ever let a woman tell you what a man is. Never. It's inconceivable to me. Would never let that happen in a million years. I would shut that down like that. A real man, but nope, you don't get to tell me what a man is. Or try doing a real woman would X, right? She's like, tell me, right? So do not let a woman ever tell you what a man is. It's just manipulation. That's number one. And number two, never ever let a woman ascribe your rational standards to insecurity. You're just giving off small peen energy, right? Just never let a woman. And, you know, I've got lots of advice for women, right? Don't let men intimidate you and all of that kind of stuff. And don't let men control you. But if you have rational standards, then don't let a woman ascribe your rational standards to insecurity. That is an appeal to smallness. And if a woman is appealing to smallness, saying, well, if you don't want me going and shaking my ass at a nightclub in front of 100 hyper-lusty guys, then you're insecure. It's like, well, if you trusted me. It's like, but it's sort of a self-defining thing. So if your woman wants to go and shake her ass at a nightclub in front of 100 other guys, she's not engaging in trustworthy behavior. It's like somebody who takes your wallet out of your pants and runs away with it, screaming, well, you should trust me with your property. It's like, but you just stole from me. So a woman would not want to go to a club when she's in a monogamous relationship because she would want to get her validation from her boyfriend, fiance, husband. And this is to do with social media, thirst traps, bikini pictures, and so on, right? You want other men to lust after you. That is not monogamous. It's not monogamy, which means that you can't be trusted. If you want to go to a nightclub dressed in tight clothes with heavy makeup on, teased up hair, shake your ass in front of 100 guys who will have sex with you at the drop of a hat, then you're not trustworthy, right? So if you trusted me, it's like, well, if I trusted you, you wouldn't go do this. Like, you wouldn't go do this, right? And of course, you can, if you want to do sort of mild experiments, you can just say, oh man, this ex-girlfriend of mine is in town. She's just always wanted me back. We're going to go have dinner together at a nice hotel. She'd be tense, right? Like, why would you want to go? If you're in a relationship with me, why would you want to go and have dinner with an ex-girlfriend at a nice hotel when she really lusts after you and wants you back? Well, that's just, honey, that's just coming from a place of insecurity, man. You know, you got to trust me. It's like, but if I'm to trust you, you have to act in a trustworthy manner. It's not some platonic thing you just attach to people like a post-it note called trust. Right? You have to act in a trustworthy manner. But no, never, ever, ever let. And of course, for women, don't ever let a man tell you what a real woman is or what a real woman would do and so on, right? It's not an argument. And the moment you let a woman define your masculinity, you've lost her. Like, you might hang out for a while longer, but she's going to cheat on you. It's a shit test, right? Can't ever let a woman define to you what masculinity is. I mean, you can share with her what it's like to be a man and so on, but you can never let a woman define. All right. I'm thrilled, says Oscar, for my first live with you, Steph. Happy to see the local stream is working well because Rumble is blocked in France. Oh no. Is a tiny bit of fact and reality getting through to the hypersensitive, hysterical French mind? Man, talk about a matriarchy, man. French men are, well, you know, post-World War I, World War II, the soy in male French veins is second only to being made entirely of tofu. Thank you for the tip, freedomman.com/donate, to help out the show. Somebody asks, how can I regain trust in my ability to make decisions after admittedly making catastrophically bad decisions in the past? Well, you have to make better decisions. You can't just magically trust your ability to make good decisions. You have to start making better decisions. Right? If you start making better decisions, you can start trusting yourself to make better decisions. The real question is, how do you start making better decisions? And the answer, of course, is philosophy. You apply things. You apply your decision matrices through a philosophical filter. So if you give me an example of a bad decision that you've made in the past, then I can give you some help with that. But in general, so bad decisions are good decisions for people who hate you. If you make a bad decision, it's a good decision for people who hate you. So, for instance, the people who around me, when I almost married the wrong woman, which would have been a catastrophe and a disaster in my life as a whole, the people who were encouraging me did not like me, because they were encouraging me to do bad things or things that were bad for me. But it's good for them, right? It's good for them. If you're up against a boxing match, then if you could get the advice to your boxing match opponent to get super drunk the night before and eat, you know, 3 cheesecakes, then he's going to show up hungover and bloated, and you're going to have a much better chance of beating him in the fight. So a bad decision for him is good for you. So if you're making bad decisions in life, they're good decisions for people who are praying for your failure. Right? So it's the old Gore Vidal quote. It's not enough that I succeed. My friends must also fail. And particularly moral competition, intrasexual competition. If you have, you know, your friends, your male friends, there's some ice queen uber hottie somewhere around and you're like, she's pretty, oh, you should go talk to her, man. Well, they're probably encouraging you to get into a situation which costs you self-confidence so that they'll have more access to females when you're around. Women who are less attractive, it's been shown that hairdressers who are less attractive than their clients, the women, more often will tell their clients to cut their hair short, right? So the sabotage of attractive women's appearance is really essential for female intrasexual competition, right? Intrasexual is with your same sex, right? So women will encourage, especially pretty women who are overweight, to be comfortable and happy in their own body so they don't lose weight and get the more attractive men, right? Sort of the Rebel Phillips, that actress, an Australian actress who always played the horny weird girl. She lost a bunch of weight. and I think so did the singer Adele. So yeah, so be comfortable, fit in any size, be comfortable with your own weight. Don't let a man dictate your beauty standards. Don't wear makeup, cut your hair short. Fat is fine. I mean, this is all just women competing with each other. So if a woman who's less attractive than you convinces you to cut your hair short, and then she gets the guy because he likes long hair, then a bad decision for you is a good decision for her. That which harms you benefits her. And there's lots of times in life which is a zero-sum or negative-sum game. Right? So a negative-sum game is two countries who are at war. One may win a particular battle or fight, and maybe they lost 10,000 men, but the other side lost 20,000. So both sides lost, but one side lost less, right? So when it comes particularly to intersexual competition, you can either become more attractive or you can make the other person appear less attractive, right? You can be a big fish in a little pond or a big fish in a big pond, right? So girls do this all the time, and guys do this too. So guys, the nerds will call the jocks dumb. Oh, he's such a jock, right? And you see this revenge of the nerds, right? That the jocks are all just mean and sociopathic and bad, right? Entire groups that tend to be less good at athletics will always mock and scorn the athletic men. Why? Because the women are drawn to athletically competent men and not to pencil neck nerds with bad skin and neck beards. So is it easier for the nerd to attack and downgrade the jock, or is it easier for the nerd to start exercising and getting good at sports? I think we all know the answer to that. So do you attack the good and bring it down, or do you work to achieve the good, right? So you'll see lots of these things, which is, guys who work out too much are just kind of stupid and lunkheads and so on. It's like, well, no, you can work out and listen to Dostoevsky. Lord knows I've done that. And athletes tend to be more intelligent than non-athletes, and they also tend to have far better social skills, right? Because athletics is about teaching war and social skills, which is to compete hard and not hold grudges, right? Compete hard and don't hold grudges. It's really, really important in life. So if you're making bad decisions, right, the first place you need to look is, okay, who benefits from those bad decisions? So when I was big on social media and big in the sort of alternate media circles, people were constantly telling me to take on topics that were self-destructive for me. And why were they doing that? Because they wanted me out of the way so they could get my audience. And I did that, but on my terms. I did all of that, but on my terms, right? So, and people are, you know, finally catching up now, as we can see, and it only took almost half a decade, and they still got a ways to go. So yeah, don't look at bad decisions as, oh my God, I'm just mysteriously making all these terrible decisions. So like, no, look at who hates you and wants you to fail. And if you're honest with yourself, for the most part, unless you've had a real moral revolution in your relationships. Well, let me ask you this. How many people in your life do you think would be secretly happy if a bad thing happened to you? All right, let's get to your questions. What about the deadbeat moms? Need to mainstream the consciousness around toxic gynocentric benefits of women using inexcusable legalism to prevent men from accessing their children. For sure. I'm generally on edge around NPC, so it is draining. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is back to the isolation being identity, right? Whatever has stats on the number of sex workers, I think it is under 10 to 15%. So is the number of sex workers on their show? Okay. I mean, I've never watched a whole show, but I do see the clips, which is obviously not completely fair, which is why I'm sort of half and half. Letting women tell me what a man is was sinned up 0 to 26. I was slow on the uptake. Yeah, sorry. If you can't be bothered to check your comments or typos, I'm not going to address them. Do you have a heuristic for when an employee should start to switching their own to their own business? How do you know? How did you know you were ready? Well, I'm a big one. This is my general belief about life as a whole. Opportunities are rare. Opportunities are rare. So I was working at a coding job, and I started a business on the side. I co-founded a company. Now, I'm not a guy, I'm bubbling over with philosophical ideas, with novel ideas, story ideas, and so on. I don't bubble over with business ideas. I'm not just like, oh man, I got like 10 business ideas I could start tomorrow, right? I mean, if I really put my effort and energy into it, maybe I could, especially with AI prompting you now. So I was like, I'm very much it's now or never. I'm a big thing. I'm a big believer of opportunities are rare. And if you miss one, you might not get another. Now we have in the modern world, a whole mindset that has been developed and programmed into people that opportunities are endless. This is particularly true for women, that women are told, oh, you just date around for fun. There's sort of lean in Sheryl Sandberg stuff, which is entirely horrible and undermining the West. So, oh yeah, just date a guy, date a cool guy from Chile, and then you can go to Thailand and maybe tour around there for a bit and things like that, right? So you don't ask women's body count, you just ask how many countries they've been to and multiply that by four. So, you don't have to pick up a guy. I mean, high school, it's not going to last. College is just a fling. Go travel, go get a job. And it's like, don't worry, honey, in your early 30s, there'll be a plethora of great guys around just waiting to date you. And they won't be, right? People disappear, right? So trying to find a good man or a good woman in your 30s is like trying to find a really high quality used car. It's rare because, of course, if the car is quality, people don't want to sell it. If it works beautifully, people don't want to sell it. So the idea that you can just wait and opportunities for dating. And I mean, I know people in my life who are going through this right now. So if you wait, it may not come again, right? Like when I met my wife and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I wasn't like, oh, I'm sure someone better is going to come along. It's like, so you take what works and you take your opportunities because they don't come along. So every day, they're rare. So for me, it was like, I'm going to do this philosophy show and I'm not going to wait. I want to get in early. I want to get an audience. I want to do great work. I want to really help people. And waiting generally worsens things. Do it now or don't do it, but don't wait. Do it now or don't do it, but don't wait. So if you have an opportunity to start a business, or if you've had a great idea and it's sort of keeping you up at night and you've done your research and, maybe you're new to the field, like, or you want to, you're getting really good at using AI to generate code and that's going to give you an advantage or whatever it is, right? You do it when you can. And generally, when it becomes unbearable to work for other people, that's a good time to start doing it yourself. But find someone who can fill in your skills gap, right? Like the Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs combo, right? So find somebody who's going to complement your skill set. That's ideal. Somebody who's better at selling if you're better at technical or vice versa. And just do it. And if that window is open, just leap through it. I've never regretted taking an opportunity. I mean, they haven't panned out a lot of times, right? But I've never regretted taking an opportunity because they are very rare in life. Like someone you're really compatible with is very rare in life, particularly as you're more individuated. NPCs are compatible in emptiness. So they're compatible in that they're not there, which is why NPCs fight so much. because they want to get close to each other, but they don't fundamentally exist. They're just empty shells of leftover programming. So they want to get close. They can't get close. They blame each other for their emptiness. Well, if you really loved me, I'd feel better. Well, if you really cared about me, I wouldn't feel so empty. But they won't replace programming with original thought and authenticity and spontaneous honesty in the moment. So they feel empty. They're drawn towards each other. And it's a torture because the closer they get to each other, the more they see the emptiness and the more they blame the other person. So they're constantly drawn to each other and yet repelled by each other's emptiness. So hope that helps. Great to see new faces in the community. Yes, that is true. Good morning, all. Thank you, Watcher. Thank you very much, Instinctual Drift. That is very kind. I super appreciate that. Rumble seems to have better bandwidth than Locals, which is owned by Rumble as of 2021. Whether or not it has anything to do with it, I'm in Australia. I'm switching over there and also a long-term donator via freedomain.com/donate. Hope. Here are the spillover coins, which you absolutely deserve for everything that you do, Steph. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Somebody says, I'm married and had kids with someone who has consistently punished me for having any vulnerability or expressing any genuine needs. He had a call in with you, and after a few days, I asked him about it. He said he hadn't thought about it. You're right. I was well embedded in my destructive family of origin when I made these initial decisions. So I would rephrase this, and of course, I say I'm very sorry for this situation, but I will say this. I married and had kids with someone who has consistently punished me for having any vulnerability and expressing any genuine needs. What I would say is I chose someone to punish myself for having any vulnerability and expressing any genuine needs because I wanted to serve the sabotage needs of those who disliked me, probably your parents when you were growing up. All right. Luck is where preparation meets opportunity. Yeah, I've heard that before too. But it just doesn't tell you that you really should. Thank you, Vincent. That's very kind. I appreciate your tip. So opportunity is rare and seize the day. Absolutely seize the day and give it everything you've got. I love trade work, but I've always had big-headed boomers that were unbearable to work with. Yeah, I mean, boomers are toddlers that you need to shield reality from because they really can't handle it. Because they had nothing but propaganda and really had to pursue alternative information. So, that is a perfect rephrase. Thank you. Yeah, and I'm really sorry for the childhood, but you are victimized by the sabotage of others that you don't see more than the people who fulfill that mandate. Hey, little sister, what have you done? All right, let's get to some other questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems. Ian Carroll is like a very charismatic guy. I just wanted to mention that. When it comes to the patriarchy, when it comes to the patriarchy, 73% of all women from every class survived the sinking of the Titanic. Only 19% of men survived. 73% of all women from every class survived the sinking of the Titanic. Only 19% of men survived. 'Cause patriarchy. That is funny. All right. I think they're starting to look at the vaccine autism connection. The sad thing, of course, is that nobody's going to be held accountable. there may be a general shift in the mindset, but nobody's going to be held accountable. Generally, I try to avoid industries where they have begged for and achieved release from liability. I mean, that's just, you know, you buy a ladder and it's got like a list of all the things you can't do because idiots and ladders are a bad combination. But I try to stay away from industries that have specifically begged for, demanded, and achieved liability for their products. Trump released a statement saying Canada is cheating the U.S. farmers. He wrote, Canada is cheating the United States farmers on USMCA. In 2024, Canada retained tariffs on various U.S. goods, particularly in protected sectors like dairy, that are operated under a supply management system. Some examples of Canadian tariffs on U.S. dairy outside of the limited quota include milk up to 243%, butter up to 298%, cheese up to 245%. These sky-high tariffs are part of Canada's unfair, long-standing policy to shield domestic producers from foreign competition, especially in agriculture. Our great U.S. dairy farmers deserve fair treatment from Canada. Enjoy it while you can. And what is it Trudeau's, since Trudeau started bagging on Trump? The Liberal Party has gone up 20 points in popularity, which is just women, right? It's just women. The Liberal Party is the female party, like the Democrat Party is the female party. He's standing up to a bully. I like him. Good hair. Oh, God, the boomer attitude and the intentional withholding of valuable information in order to feel internally superior. Very sad. Boomers just do whatever it takes to serve their master, narcissism. Boomers are the first generation since the Middle Ages to be fundamentally offended and enraged by reality. Would you give up your spot in a Titanic lifeboat for a modern leftist woman with blue hair and bad tattoos? No, not at all. I would give it up for my wife and child. But I would not give it up. I would be like, nope. I tell you what, you think that men and women are equal? Let's have an arm wrestle to see who gets on the boat. Right? So I'd get on the boat. Absolutely. I no longer have any interest whatsoever in shielding irrational people from the results of their bad decisions. I used to really want to throw myself, but you can only do that if you view them as children. Right? Children should be shielded from the effects of bad decisions. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But if a child makes a bad decision on a bike and, you know, breaks his arm, then you take him to the doctor and you pay for the doctor because he's a child, right? And it's really, it's kind of on you. So I did this for many years, somewhat unconsciously, is that, you know, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. But I'm no longer interested in that. I'm going to have to, and it's kind of embarrassing it took me so long, but I'm treating adults as adults. I'm treating adults. If you say that there's no difference between men and women, and that, especially if you're on the left, then violence is how you get resources. So then, you know, throwing a woman to one side who's a leftist and getting on the lifeboat, I mean, how does that go against what she believes, right? It's going to be hard to separate vaccines from all the other environmental toxins, to say nothing of public school indoctrination and parental neglect. Well, and, you know, putting kids on Ritalin, like street speed, right? So. But anyway, it will be interesting to see what the results are. I mean, my general belief is there's a people who have a lot of power who are profiting from whatever is causing the explosion in autism. And autism is really a terrible thing for people to live with. I remember reading this story many years ago of this woman who's like, yeah, my son is severely autistic and I spend the first 45 minutes trying to get him to brush his teeth. That's my whole day. And he's fighting like tooth and nail, right? And of course, as he gets bigger and stronger, that gets less and less likely. But autism I know there's different gradations and so on, but autism is very, very difficult for parents. And the fact that society has not been moving heaven and earth to figure out the cause of autism has me generally and automatically believe that there's significant money powers that are making profit off whatever has a side effect of autism. Otherwise, right, you look at how society mobilized to find and attack the unvaccinated, or, you know, the hysteria about various bigotries that people believe in and motivate. People are incredibly motivated to find root causes and attack things that they're interested in. So it's the dog that doesn't bark in society that's usually the most interesting spot. So, you know, the prevalence of autism has gone up enormously, like insane amounts, right? It used to be 1 in 10,000. Now it is 1 in 34 among boys. That is catastrophic. And of course, if it keeps going up, society cannot. Like, there are just too many resources are going to, too many unproductive people, too many resources for healthcare going into it. So the fact that society is not moving heaven and earth to figure out the cause of autism means that people know and don't want to look. So the cause of autism must be known, otherwise people would keep looking. That's the foundational fact. The cause of autism has to be known. Right, like if you buried the bodies, you don't want people out there looking for the bodies because you know where they are. And you certainly don't, if you buried the bodies in your backyard, you don't want people digging around in your backyard looking for bodies. So the causes of autism must be known, or at least strongly suspected. Otherwise, there would be a massive societal push to find it, right? I mean, the massive societal push to deplatform me was a good example of how organized society can be when it has a moral mission. And people are putting more effort into deplatforming philosophers than society as a whole. And certainly the media is putting more effort into deplatforming philosophers than finding the cause of autism. What a gift to hear your reflections this Sunday morning. Thank you, Stefan. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. How long until we see ads on TV, says Pulsar. Have you or a loved one been injured by the mRNA COVID vaccine? Call law firm XYZ. Honestly, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I don't think so. Because once you get people to participate in a vicious and destructive enough lie, they can no longer admit the truth. They can no longer admit the truth. Why has there not been a sort of truth and reconciliation committee about what happened over COVID? I mean, what happened over COVID was as monstrous an evil in the world as a whole as has been seen in quite some time. It was brutal. Absolutely brutal. We don't have to go over the details. Everybody has their own stories. Everybody has their own traumas. But yeah, it was like mask off. Mask off, man. Yeah, we do have a Stefan Izzy show coming soon. She's been very busy with a wide variety of other things, but she's eager to do a show, and we'll get to that soon. But so why has there not? Because so many people participated and got behind the COVID tyranny that they can't admit it. See, you need a lot of social pressure to change and apologize, usually. It very rarely comes from the conscience, because if you have a strong conscience, you don't do the kind of things that require big apologies anyway. So if you have a good conscience, you tend not to engage in behavior that's going to require big moral apologies. And of course, if you have a good conscience, you're surrounded by other people with who have themselves good consciences. And so they're going to warn you away from doing things that are going to require big moral apologies. So because of that, it's people with low to no conscience who did all of the terrible stuff in COVID, right? So who is going to convince them they have anything to apologize for? Well, it ain't going to be the media, certainly not the American media, because the American media, being largely funded by Big Pharma, was pushing a lot of vaccine hysteria. And hysteria it was. Let's be sort of clear about that. Thank you, C2. Hysteria it was, because the claims, you know, safe and effective, it was not effective. In fact, there's some studies that show that those who get more boosters are more likely to get COVID. It's like the opposite of effective in some ways. And as far as safe goes, they had no right to say that because the testing data was hidden. Normal vaccines take 10 years to develop and have a 94% failure rate, and that's on existing technology, which is the inactive virus or whatever it is, the activated virus being used to trigger an immune system response. So it had only been tested for a couple of months. The testing data was hidden until the judge was going to be hidden for 75 years, right? And then they demanded liability shields. It was not brain surgery. This was not brain surgery at all. So the media is not going to tell people that wrong was done. Right. The media has long been largely absent a conscience, because how often does the media look back and say, well, we got this wrong. Ooh, that was pretty bad. Let's try and figure out how we got it wrong. And let's try and put methodologies into place by which we're not going to get it wrong next time. Right. How many media companies have come out and said, well, we kind of got the whole laptop from hell, the Hunter Biden laptop, we got that completely wrong. So, wow, but the Alphabet agency's 17 experts told us blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, how are they dealing with the people in charge of the Alphabet agencies under Trump? Well, they're very skeptical and they're constantly pushing back and they're demanding proof, right? So they don't do really mea culpas. They don't go back and say, oh, gee, you know, we said this, it turned out we were wrong, and we've put this and that process in place to try and ensure we're not going to get things wrong in the future, right? So how many media outlets that castigated, attacked, and attacked people who said that the lab origin of COVID was the most likely explanation? How many of those media outlets, given that even the Alphabet agencies now say that the lab origins of COVID-19 is the most likely explanation, how many media outlets have published apologies to the people they attacked and slandered for saying this, right? How many media outlets who said that Derek Chauvin undoubtedly killed George Floyd and there were no other factors, when the fentanyl, the heart disease, the high blood pressure, all of this kind of stuff, when that came out, how many of them said, oh, I'm sorry, we were wrong about that. We rushed to judgment and we're going to put this and this and this in place to make sure that doesn't happen again, right? The media is really quiet. Not long ago, they were celebrating the removal of Assad. Well, of course, they're celebrating the removal of Assad because they want Christians to be killed, right? In the same way that they celebrate the war in Ukraine because they want Christians to be killed. It's a lot of atheists, right, in socialists in the media. Boom, boom. All right. Wasn't it also the case for centuries to someone that people who had autism, amongst other abnormalities, was simply euthanized? Could us not doing that and allowing those genes to reproduce lead to some increase in autism? No, not that fast, though. And of course, I'm not in approval. I'm not approving euthanization, of course, and anything like that. But no, autism was not really historically a thing. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Thank you, Jay. But autism was not. So there are a lot of people who kind of obsessively classified various behaviors all throughout human history. And you really can't find descriptions of autism as a behavior prior to relatively recently. So, of course, people knew about madness and they wrote about madness. People knew about narcissism, right? Narcissism is from the ancient Greek fable of Narcissus, is a guy who was so beautiful that he fell in love with his own reflection in a lake and just leaned forward to kiss himself or hug himself because he felt himself so beautiful until he drowned, right? So the narcissism is an age-old issue, selfishness as a whole, sociopathy or coldness or cruelty, is that living without a conscience. This all been very deeply explicated ambition, mad ambition, being a rake, using women, women using men. Like all of this stuff has been roundly described in literature and poetry and general issues throughout human history. Even the effects of insomnia, right? I mean, I played Macbeth, right? His speech on the effects of insomnia is powerful, particularly to anyone who's gone through insomnia. Knits up the raveled sleeve of care, sleep. Can't have it. So a wide variety of mental dysfunctions and issues and problems have been talked about. I mean, even mental retardation or developmental delays. You can look at, of course, Lenny. I think you have Lemmy Kilmister. Lenny in Of Mice and Men, right? So all of this has been written about for centuries, thousands of years, and so on. A vanity, a selfishness, and all of this, right? And yet no real descriptions of autism. It's a modern phenomenon for the most part. And again, I'm no expert. This is just my sort of understanding. None of this is medical advice, blah, blah, blah. But there really isn't. So it's a particularly modern phenomenon. So then you have to say, well, what has changed? What has changed? Hey, liked and followed. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Autism is unique, and the first case study was only in the early 1900s, which is, I guess, post-origins of vaccines. So I think it's going to be, I think it's finally going to be studied, and it's going to be brutal. And here's the thing, it doesn't really matter. This is the sad thing. Like, it doesn't really matter because people have a robust immunity to truth. It really is something. They have an absolutely robust immunity to truth. So the people who are skeptical of vaccines, let's say that a reasonable causality, just theoretically, a reasonable causality between vaccines and autism or vaccines and other disorders. Let's say that a reasonable causality is established. And what that means is there are fuzzy lines in the direction of connection. And then there's also a theoretical underpinning as to how it could work, how it or not work, how it could harm the brain. Like it's a neurological issue, right? It has already been studied. RFK Jr. has a book out, Vaxxed, Unvaxxed. I understand that. I understand that, but it has not been, I don't think it has been studied in a way that is satisfactory. Because there's a particular, as far as I understand it, there's a particular vaccine series that is considered more dangerous. That one has not been studied in isolation and so on, right? So if there's a theory as to how vaccines could cause the neurological issues like autism, if there's a mechanism by which it could be established, and if there is fairly significant relationship between that, if it's dose dependent. And of course, if you look at Mennonites and other people who don't really vaccinate, the Amish and so on, they don't seem to have much, if any, of the autism. So if there's a theory as to how it could happen that seems fairly valid from a medical or scientific standpoint, and if there's a relationship, then there's going to be some kind of causality that's established. But it doesn't matter. This is a sad thing. Like, honestly, this is one of the reasons I don't really do politics, because it doesn't matter. Because, I mean, what was it, a year ago? The sort of chemical imbalance theory was sort of disproven, right? The serotonin levels don't seem to have anything to do with depression. Does it matter? Do people care? Has it fundamentally changed anything? Somebody says, I recall reading a part of the rise is due to the increase in awareness and broadcasting of diagnostic criteria. I mean, I know that they always say that. I'm sorry, I don't mean to, that's not an argument, but this is what people say. It's not that there are more autistic people around. It's just that we are just more aware. And it's like, nope, nope. So I went to a high school with about 2,000 people, if I remember rightly. And so there should have been 60 autistic kids, mostly males. And there weren't. There were none. So especially something like autism, right? So something like autism, if the parents have vaccinated their children, and if it then comes out that vaccines have a role, determinant or not, have a role in the development of autism, what are parents, I mean, are they going to sit there and say, oh, gee, I poisoned my kid? So parents are older these days. That could have something to do with it. Well, remember, there were always older parents. They just had started having children younger, right? So there were always older parents, because women would start having kids at 20 and it would tail off in their late 30s, right? So there were, and of course, prior to birth control, women generally would have babies until they hit menopause or try, or it would be a factor. So there have always been older parents. That's not the answer. So, you know, there's this guy who wrote on Twitter that he says, I have a mental disorder. I keep thinking that people are going to change their minds based on reason and evidence. Somebody writes, I personally find it annoying. Not saying it's right. That's just how I feel. That autism is lumped into practically fine people with quirks and the fundamentally damaged kids who will never be toilet trained or talk. Yeah, I mean that the spectrum thing, right? I get that for sure. It's also bizarre that they lump Asperger's into autism. Spergs have been around for a long time and there isn't anything actually wrong with them. So people who don't particularly read social cues and tell the truth used to be called philosophers. Now I guess they're called mentally damaged or something like that. I mean, how do you even quantify a settlement for that type of side effect when somebody's entire life is destroyed? Well, there is no, right? There is no. And this is another thing too, where there's no recompense, people tend no longer to admit fault. I've never known somebody, I've known quite a lot of people now, right? I mean, over the course of my life, I'm pushing 60, right? So, sorry, I need to say this, says someone. Your sermons are better than church. Thank you. I appreciate that. Although these days, gynocentric churches might not be saying a huge amount, but I appreciate that. Thank you. So, if people have known about the damages of this sort of medical treatments, and they have withheld that knowledge from the public and profited from it, then, I mean, there would almost be no punishment too severe, right? I mean, that would just be appalling. But of course, punishing someone doesn't bring your kid back from autism. So there's no recompense. And so this is another thing too. How do you undo people's anti-vaccine skeptic hysteria and aggression and calls for the stripping of human rights from the unvaccinated. How do you undo that? Right? I mean, of course, I've had a bunch of calls with people. I released some of them with people over COVID having family members where they disagreed on the effectiveness and safety of the vaccine. It tore entire families apart. You know, people were like, well, you can't come for Christmas. You can't come for this, that, or the other because, you know, you're not vaccinated. You're going to kill grandma. People died, you know, in old age homes with their hands pressed up against the glass and they died alone. Nobody holds a hand, nobody to hug them, nobody to like, it's just appalling. The amount of staggering damage that was done to people and the vicious suppression for the sake of the emergency use authorization, which now I think has been extended to what, 2029? So the amount of the suppression of alternative treatments that potentially, I'm no doctor, but as far as I understand it, might have saved lives, so might have turned the corner for some people who were suffering. The manipulation of the data, you know, somebody with a motorcycle crash died of a motorcycle crash, but had COVID and so on. The fact that they didn't count people as being vaccinated until a couple of weeks after vaccination, which meant vaccine injuries were often treated as sort of COVID or something else. So, I mean, the amount of corruption and horror that went on over the COVID era, how do you undo that? How do you undo that? When you've dehumanized someone because they thought for themselves, and especially if you've dehumanized someone who thought for themselves and it turns out they made some really good points, that they were right in some ways to some degree. Like, this is why when people have done wrongs that they can't undo, the relationships are generally over because they can't apologize. They can't process it. They can't process when they've done such absolutely horrible things, and they've been revealed as empty NPC vessels of corruption. I mean, how do you get up? I mean, people have to get up out of bed. They have to look themselves in the mirror. They brush their teeth, and they can't look and see a demon face. Looking back, they can't say, I'm fundamentally morally empty, and I can just be filled up with hatred for whoever the rulers point at, that I am part of the worst class of human beings, which is the majority of human beings. Like in the Milgram experiments, I will murder my fellow man if somebody in a white coat kind of implies that the experiment has to continue. Like, to look at yourself and say, I'm capable of murdering an innocent person if somebody in a white lab coat kind of hints that it would be helpful for me to continue the experiment. How do you look at yourself in the mirror? Yeah, how do you look at yourself in the mirror? How do you get out of bed? How do you have to blank out all of your own corruption in order to not throw yourself off a bridge. Like, in order to just be able to function in the world, you have to reject truth, reason, empiricism, objectivity, reality. You have to. Somebody says, this is from Rumble, Trump financed the COVID jab and Biden mandated it, so don't expect anyone from the Uniparty to come out against the jab. Yeah, for sure. Steph, are you still playing computer games with Izzy, like Baldur's Gate 3? If so, in a further stream, I'd like to suggest and provide enough for and more for you both to play them together. Yeah, if you have anything, I can't find any particular games that I enjoy. I've tried a couple, but, you know, it's part of also pushing 60. You realize that you don't have as much time left. Like, it's a finite amount of time. You can kind of conceive it. So I have less time for video games because I get it's kind of a subtraction from my life. Maybe Izzy has autism. What a bizarre and odd thing to say. Bizarre, unpleasant, and odd thing to say. Well, here's this attention you ordered. My God, what an unlovable person. It'd be cool to get an FDR Quake 3 game going one of these days. Yeah, I think that's right. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do somebody was posting, and this I've talked about before, but the numbers are kind of in. 14 million twin pairs confirm all traits are partially heritable. The home you grow up in has surprisingly little effect on how you turn out. So this is a quote. What makes us who we are? To what extent are the differences between us written in our genes? And how much do we owe to the environment? Philosophers, scientists, and armchair theorists have debated this question for centuries, but a groundbreaking meta-analysis of twin studies offers the clearest answer yet. Spanning over 50 years of research, 2,748 publications, and more than 14 million twin pairs, the study reveals five striking insights into the nature of nature and nurture. Among them, that every trait is partially heritable, that the influence of genes often fades with age, and that the home you grow up in has surprisingly little effect on how you turn out in life. I mean, I would agree with that to a large degree, but I think not in the extremes, right? I mean, if you have an ACE score of 9 or 10, that is going to have a big effect. Now, with regards to the influence of genes fading with age, I don't think that that's, certainly with intelligence, that doesn't happen. So what does this say? Somebody says the correlations for both MZ and DZ twins, somewhat fraternal and identical, were lower in the older subjects. It's unclear whether this is an age effect or a cohort effect. Possibly this has to do with the older subjects having been raised in an era with more random environmental insults like childhood disease. I'm not sure I quite followed that. But certainly with IQ, it tends to become more pronounced as you age, the effects of IQ, like 85% by your late teens, 80%, 85% of variation in intelligence is genetic. So, are you going to play the new Doom game coming out this year? Absolutely. You can be pretty convinced that the Doom game is going to be not woke. Maybe Izzy has autism. Do you find that offensive? I don't know what you mean by offensive. I don't find it offensive. It's just a completely weird statement to make. All right. Somebody says, I've wasted some of my life at a more youthful age to condense some decent considerations for you both. I found some good games that have resonated with my wife and myself. Oh, good. Thank you. Doom is still my favorite game. I played it since I was 3 years old. Really? Oh, dear. You really shouldn't have been playing Doom when you were 3. Not ideal, in my humble opinion. Not ideal. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems? I'm thrilled to hear. I got two call-in shows today, so I got to go get me some stuff done before I lash myself to the ship of philosophy. But yeah, if you have any last questions or comments, I would be certainly happy to hear them. freedomain.com/donate. Yeah, I was able to work DOS at that age too. Yeah, I actually had a business when I was in university where I would go and help people with their computer issues. Would you share a time or two that you received meaningful support or a donation that was very powerful? No, I don't think in particular that would be of interest. I've got one. Can I have a minute or two to type it up, Steph? Sorry, you don't use voice dictation? When you shit on adult virgins, it showed you have no awareness of who your audience is. Yes, I clearly have no idea who my audience is because I've engaged in thousands of conversations with interested audience members over the last 20 years. I've done more audience research than any other business in human history. So the idea that I don't know who my audience is when I literally do live streams, getting feedback and questions and comments. I've had 2 hour plus conversations with thousands of listeners over the course of the last 20 years. The idea that I don't know who my audience is very, very funny. And also, I'm not sure what you mean by shit on adult virgins. Maybe they're virgins because that's the scatological play that you're into, but not them. So, I still follow you on X. Not at all a request for you to return to X. I really appreciate all of your old tweets, some real philosophical gold. I appreciate that. I will occasionally search up my name on X just to see if anyone's talking about me. And occasionally I'll get something big that pops up, but for the most part, it's not much. So that's important for me to know that People aren't really talking about me on social media, which means that there's not that much demand. So, all right, just waiting for that. How do you stay so motivated and positive? Good question. How do I stay so motivated and positive? I'm doing the very best work that I can do with all the gifts at my disposal and all of the support of you lovely people. I'm doing the very best possible work that I can do. As a philosopher, as a husband, as a father, as a friend, I'm doing the very best possible work that I can do. That's not all I'm capable of, but it's all the world at present allows. I'm doing the very maximum philosophy that is allowed. Like, you know how when you're lifting weights, you don't do the very maximum weight you could possibly lift because the likelihood of injury goes up considerably. You do the maximum possible weight that is sustainable. So I'm doing the absolute maximum philosophy that is sustainable in the world. If you're doing the very best you can possibly do for the world as a whole, I don't know what other satisfaction I'm supposed to get out of life. Like, I'm a great father, I'm a great husband, I'm a good friend, I'm really working hard to be as effective and positive and productive a philosopher as I can possibly be. So given that I'm applying, this is an old Aristotelian argument, that applying your maximum resources in the pursuit of a positive and virtuous, ideally virtuous task is your best chance at happiness or eudaimonia. So I am doing the very best possible allowable work in the realm of philosophy and virtue, and I'm not sure what satisfaction I'm supposed to find outside of that, if that makes sense. Oh, I forgot I had some creatine in my coffee. Why am I drinking caffeinated beach sand? I don't know. So, for instance, I would say, like, I'm reading bits of The Fountainhead to my daughter. Now, my wife and my daughter will sit around and read books as a sort of thing that we do. And so I'm reading. You are an amazingly virtuous person, Steph. Well, thank you. I hope it's not amazing. I hope it's reproducible. So her idea that you fashion what you do relative to reason and the present rather than inheriting what was before is really, really important and powerful to me. So when it came to philosophy, I wanted the non-aggression principle and property rights and self-ownership to spread as much as possible. And The Fountainhead, you know, it says you wipe the don't inherit the past, start with a blank slate. Right? Start with the blank slate. Blank slate, right? Start with a blank slate. And if you start with a blank slate, then you can do incredible stuff. So when Howard Rourke is meeting with the dean, fantastic, right? This speech changed my life. So Howard Rourke says, but I don't understand. Why do you want me to think that this is great architecture? He pointed to a picture of the Parthenon. That, said the dean, is the Parthenon. So it is. I haven't the time to waste on silly questions. All right, then. Rourke got up. He took a long ruler from the desk. He walked to the picture. Shall I tell you what's wrong with it? It's the Parthenon, said the dean. Yes, goddammit, the Parthenon. The ruler struck the glass over the picture. Look, said Rourke. The famous flutings on the famous columns, what are they there for? To hide the joints in wood, when columns were made of wood. Only these aren't. They're marble. The triglyphs, what are they? Wood. Wooden beams. The way they had to be laid when people began to build wooden shacks. Your Greeks took marble and they made copies of their wooden structures out of it because others had done it that way. Then your masters of the Renaissance came along and made copies in plaster of copies in marble of copies in wood. Now here we are making copies in steel and concrete of copies in plaster, of copies in marble, of copies in wood. Why? The dean sat and watched him curiously. Something puzzled him, not in the words, but in Rourke's manner of saying them. Rules, said Rourke. Here are my rules. What can be done with one substance must never be done with another. No two materials are alike. No two sites on Earth are alike. No two buildings have the same purpose. The purpose, the site, the materials determine the shape. Nothing can be reasonable or beautiful unless it's made by one central idea. And the idea sets every detail. A building is alive, like a man. Its integrity is to follow its own truth, its one single theme, and to serve its own single purpose. A man doesn't borrow hunks of his soul. Its maker gives it the soul and every wall, window, and stairway to express it. But all the proper forms of expression have been discovered long ago. Expression of what? The Parthenon did not serve the same purpose as its wooden ancestor. An airline terminal does not serve the same purpose as the Parthenon. Every form has its own meaning. Every man creates his meaning and form and goal. Why is it so important what others have done? Why is anyone and everyone right, so long as it is not yourself? Why is truth made a mere matter of arithmetic, and only of addition at that? Why is everything twisted out of all sense to fit everything else? There must be some reason. I don't know. I've never known it. I'd like to understand. For heaven's sake, said the dean, sit down. That's better. Do you mind very much putting that ruler down? Thank you. Now, listen to me. No one has ever denied the importance of modern techniques to be an architect. We must learn to adapt the beauty of the past to the needs of the present. The voice of the past is the voice of the people. Nothing has ever been invented by one man in architecture. The proper creative process is a slow, gradual, anonymous, collective one in which each man collaborates with all others and subordinates himself to the standards of the majority. But you see, said Rourke quietly, I have, let's say, 60 years to live. Most of that time will be spent working. I've chosen the work I want to do. If I find no joy in it, then I'm only condemning myself to 60 years of torture. And I can find the joy only if I do my work in the best way possible to me. But the best is a matter of standards, and I set my own standards. I inherit nothing. I stand at the end of no tradition. I may, perhaps, stand at the beginning of one. How old are you? Asked the dean. 22, said Rourke. Oh, quite excusable, said the dean. He seemed relieved. You'll outgrow all of that, he smiled. The old standards have lived for thousands of years and nobody has been able to improve upon them. Boom! Ah, so good. So good. The idea that the column flutings are there to hide the joints in wood, and I assume that bent wood is more vertically strong. You just copy it. Copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste. So you blank slate anything in life that you want to achieve, you must blank slate. To be original, to think for yourself. So when it came to philosophy, I started with a blank slate. I don't care what people have talked about before. I don't care what is defined as a philosophical problem. I don't care what arguments have been made in the past. What I care about is, what is the purpose of philosophy and how can I best achieve it? Without tradition, without history. What is the definition of philosophy and how can I best achieve it? Now, the definition of philosophy must be the promotion of virtue, which means you have to define virtue and find a way to promote it in a way that's actionable, because if it's not actionable, it's not virtue. If it's just theory, it's not virtue. The purpose of philosophy is the spread of virtue. It means you must define virtue and find a way to make it actionable. Arguing about whether a fucking brain in a tank is not actionable about anything. So I say, okay, what is virtue? UPB, self-ownership, non-aggression principle, property rights. Self-ownership, non-aggression principle, property rights. Okay. How do I spread the non-aggression principle? It has to be actionable, which means you have to be able to control the outcome. Can you control the outcome of the government printing money? No. Can you control the outcome of the government borrowing money? No. Can you control the outcome of the government passing laws? No. Can you control the outcome of the government starting wars? No. What is the most prevalent violation of the non-aggression principle that people can do the most about? That's blank slate. Purpose of philosophy is to spread actionable morality. What is the most prevalent violation of the non-aggression principle that people can do the most about? Child abuse. Simple. Child abuse. Which is why I focused on it. It's not a compulsion. It is an inevitable domino that falls when you say the purpose of philosophy is to spread morality that is actionable. No dietitian goes to a gulag and tells prisoners what to eat because they have to eat whatever roach-infested slop is put in front of them. Dietary advice has to be actionable. Moral advice has to be actionable. I don't care what came before, because what came before has been a rank failure, because we have the largest and most powerful governments in human history. Everything that came before has been a failure. I suffered as a child from child abuse because society didn't do anything to stop it and in fact supported it. And this was the result of 2,500 years of theology, morality, and philosophy. So all of that shit was a total failure. So when something's a total failure, you blank slate it, you wipe the slate clean, you empty whiteboard it, and you start from fucking scratch. No history, no culture, no momentum, no past. If everything that led society to where it is was a failure, you have to ignore everything that came before, except as a warning of what not to do. Now, not that complicated. How many philosophers wrote detailed tracts on parenting? I mean, you hear it a little bit here and there. John Locke mentions it in passing. Rousseau talks about it in a little bit more detail, but it's monstrous. And he himself was an abusive, terrible parent who abandoned his children to almost certain death in a wet nurse daycare factory in France. Thanks, Dylan. Dylan says, we can't get quality like this anywhere else. True. And I thank you for your support. Thank you. So it's not complicated. Everybody knows the child is the father of the man. Everybody knows that what happens in childhood echoes forward through people's lives. And because I wanted to stay blank slate, which means to think for yourself, which means no inheritance, and the past is only an example of what not to do. Like my mother was an example of what not to do. And other people in my family were examples of what not to do. I view the history of philosophy as a history of catastrophe and avoidance in general. There's exceptions. There's exceptions. But the idea that when I took a philosophy class, I took Aristotle, I took a history of philosophy class, I wrote an entire graduate school thesis on the history of philosophy. It's a history of error, because it does not address actionable virtues, primarily the non-aggression principle, self-ownership, and property rights in childhood. You cannot reason with adults who were not reasoned with as children. You cannot teach reason to adults who were not reasoned with as children. So rather than going around trying to teach everyone a language they don't understand and find no use for, like Esperanto, how about we just teach that language to children? How about we grow rational people rather than try to convert rational people? Especially because through reason, you cannot bribe or threaten people to become rational. And that's, of course, what all philosophers should have been doing. The reason why they didn't remains relatively incomprehensible to me. Ayn Rand herself wrote nothing about parenting. Children do not exist in her world. She herself never became a parent. There are some rumors she had an abortion, who knows? But there were no children in her environment. All philosophers who failed to address childhood failed as philosophers. Because the language of reason is far easier to teach to children than to try to inflict on adults. Because if you weren't reasoned with as a child, you are allergic to reason. Because if you weren't reasoned with as a child, and then somebody tries to reason with you as an adult, it reminds you of everything that was taken away from you, inflicted upon you, and that you were punished by. Child abuse makes people revolt against reason. Because if you can be reasoned with as an adult, it reminds you of how you weren't reasoned with as a child. People who are treated brutally as children view all negotiations as various forms of brutality. Ayn Rand was a child herself, though.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you, Alec. That's funny.
Oh, big brain addition to the conversation. Well, Ayn Rand was herself a child. Wow, she didn't pop fully formed from the forehead of Zeus as a grown-ass adult. Wow. She was born a mortal and grew up as a child to an adult? Wow. Well, that changes everything, because I was distinctly under the impression that she popped into existence as a chain-smoking amphetamine addict in her 40s. You just never mentioned that. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mention that Ayn Rand was a child. But that would be true of all the philosophers who failed to address childhood. All the philosophers who failed to address childhood were themselves children. What is your point? I just didn't mention that human beings are born and grow up. I don't really think, see, this is a high IQ audience, right? I generally don't feel the need to point out the blindingly fucking obvious. It's just not a thing that I do. Just remember, advanced graduate class in mathematics, please try to remember that 2 and 2 make 4. Because that's my addition to graduate level mathematics, is to remind you that 2 and 2 make 4. This is even funnier, having full knowledge of your The Truth About Ayn Rand presentation. Yeah. Yes, it is certainly true. I was never a child. All right, so that's either comedy or delusion, either way. All right, so I appreciate everyone's time today. Thank you so much. freedomain.com/donate if you would like to help out the show. Mwah. Very much, deeply and humbly and gratefully appreciated. Don't forget to share links to all kinds of cool stuff. And don't forget about all the great stuff you get. FDRURL.com/locals. You can sign up for a subscription at Locals. Kind of important. You know, like less than 10% of people on Locals are subscribers. Like, come on, guys, please. I mean, do me a solid, right? I can't grow the show organically very easily. So if you've been listening to the show for a while and you're on Locals, less than 10% of the people on Locals are subscribers. Let's try and up that a little bit. This is supposed to be about responsibility, integrity, and support for what you value. I don't have advertisements on this show. You get to save a lot of time from not having to fast forward through ads. The price of that is supporting the show. So I've saved you thousands of hours over the course of listening to the show by not having ads. That's got to be 10 or 20 bucks a month worth it for you. So yeah, don't rely on other people to do the right thing. The show exists because people support it. And if you listen to it but don't support it, you're kind of a free rider, which is not high integrity. I'll just be frank with you. So freedomain.com/donate. Subscriptions are great. You can go to subscribestar.com/freedomain for donations or subscriptions there too. And you get a lot of really great benefits and bonuses through that. So thank you everyone so much for listening, supporting the show. I really appreciate that. Have yourself a glorious day. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.